Today, though, I'm going to be talking about the prayer of silence. And we know how potent and powerful prayer is, don't we? Emerson said that prayer is contemplation of life from the highest point of view. And likewise, Charles Fillmore said that the prayer is the highest form of mind action we can take. And we know the effects of it and how transformative it is. But with all the input that we have coming at us these days, how often do we take the time or feel like we don't have the time to pray? So that's what I'm going to be talking about today. And why the prayer of silence? You know, we have all kinds of prayers. We have prayers of thanksgiving and contemplation and sometimes beseeching and bargaining and resignation and surrender. But why silence? Well, in silence, it's not just about keeping quiet or about pausing or not talking. Silence, I believe, has three innate gifts in it. And that is, the prayer of silence provides possibility, it provides power, and it increases our awareness of that presence of God that indwells in us. The cool thing is that we don't even have to close our eyes to do this. We can still practice the prayer of silence while we're speaking and moving and responding. So somebody, when they heard of my title, they said, they were joking with me, and they said, "You mean if I get to practice the prayer of silence, I get to do nothing? And are you interested in knowing why I said yes?" Cool. Okay. So the first is that the prayer of silence provides possibilities. Charles Fillmore said that everything begins from the invisible realm to the visible realm. And as you were speaking from the daily word, this is where imagination lives. This is where creative ideas come forth. And you don't insist or force in the silence. It's spacious. It's receptive. It allows. And all that possibility, when we're able to just sort of get out of the way, is right there for us to receive. And in the silence, things can emerge in subtle and maybe not so subtle ways. So recently I saw a documentary, and it was about a new warden who was assigned to a prison. And this prison was the most violent prison and in the area, in the country. And she wanted to do something different. She saw how the conditions were very harsh. The guards treated the prisoners horribly. And their principle was, if we treat them bad enough, they won't come back. But it didn't work. And she said, you know, we notice that we all have reactive minds. And how can we even hope to have any kind of transformation if we can't even calm our own minds or our own spirits? She said, no man is free, or woman, until they master themselves. And so she wanted to do an experiment. She wanted it to be that these men would be changed at depth. And so she said a prayer, "Lord, please help me make a change here. I don't know what that looks like. And I don't want anything from you besides a miracle." Amen. And she said this incredible peace came over her. And one day a guard who had heard heard about what she wanted to do, what she was up to, he said to her, I have the answer, but you and your guards have to do this first. And so what he proposed was a 10-day silent retreat called Vipassana. And how many of you know what that is? Okay, so for those who don't, we're going to be fun exploring that. And she said that our mind needs human food, higher thoughts. So she said, okay, I can do this. So day three, she's struggling. She says, oh my God, we're such noisy creatures. Even when we're not speaking, our minds are chattering like crazy. But she got through it. And then a few weeks later, they created this huge tent that housed over 1,000 of those 10,000 men. But the teacher said it had a couple rules. And he said, no chains. They were not allowed to meditate in chains. And at first, the guards objected. And then they worked it out. They said, okay, we'll put a few extra men with guns on these men so that there's no chaos that breaks out. So these were the instructions that the instructor gave to these men. And I'm going to give this to you as if you were receiving this. We will hold silence for 10 days. Pay attention to your breath. Just feel the flow of the breath moving in and out of your nostrils, into your lungs, into your belly, noting the rise and fall of your chest and your shoulders. And it would help if you stay, your posture is erect. He said, the mind is like wind. It stirs and it loves to cling to something, anything. And he says, if you just are willing to be in the silence, what you will notice is that there is a greater reality that's sort of behind the distractions and the veil of this common excitement that we always are carrying in our mind. And he said, what that is a changeless reality, God. And if you get still enough, you'll find it. You see, he could talk like that because this was India. And these were the instructions. So the men all gathered, this big tent with all these rugs, and on the third day, an unprecedented huge storm came through and it destroyed the tent. So they asked the inmates to go back to their cells and continue practice, which they did. And then all these people came from all over, volunteers and guards, and they stayed up around the clock and rebuilt and remended the tent so that they could come back and finish this 10-day retreat. And what he also said was that silence grants things space, that you will begin to notice after a while that every thought, every emotion, every sensation has a beginning, a life, and an end. In fact, behavioral science has shown that if we don't impede it, even strong emotions last for about 90 seconds. Well, you can imagine that it was probably one of the most difficult things that these men had ever done. You know how vulnerable it can be to sit with yourself? You know when you sit still, what kind of emotions can start to rise up? And what was their teaching or their practice was to refuse to move away one inch from whatever was arising in them, their thoughts, their emotions, and their sensations. Now, in Vipassana, what that is a practice in noticing the breath in naming what comes up. So it's called the five hindrances. The first one is craving. Is it lunch yet? Aversion. I could meditate if that fly wasn't bothering me. Restlessness. Sleepiness. Can I just meditate laying down? Or doubt. This isn't doing anything. Or as Krishnamurti would say, to just say the word thinking, or I'm thinking thoughts, and then return back to the breath. That was the practice. You know, it's interesting that I was certainly wasn't taught this in Catholic school, but the Sanskrit word for the word prayer is palau, which means to see oneself as wonderfully made. Can you imagine, though, with these guys? I don't think they were finding that quite yet, what they were facing with those thoughts, with those emotions, with those sensations. What they found was, let me go to step two. The second principle that silence offers us is power in our everyday life. You know, this point I've been talking about silence as something you do. But silence is also allowing ourselves to make the shift in us. And it's also about being very present. Sometimes we think that the meditative practice is about going away, and that's very anchoring. But also, it's about being very present to whoever, whatever is showing up right now in our lives. And when we come from that place, we're shifted. We respond differently, don't we? Because we're coming from a deeper place than just walking, talking heads, right? So there's an amazing power that happens. And in truth, prayer changes us to change things, doesn't it? Even when our prayer is, I don't know how to do this. But you do. When I was preparing this talk, I wanted to give a personal story, but I didn't know what to talk about. And you put out a prayer, it comes back at you. For those of you who don't know me, I'm a doctor of Oriental medicine. I've been in practicing Chinese medicine for over 38 years. And I noticed I'd been working on this talk a little bit, and then I noticed my morning schedule. And there was a man on my schedule who had arranged an appointment by email. And I didn't make the connection who he was at first. But he was just about to come, and I realized that who Jeff was. I had known him 13 years ago. And this was one of my medical mistakes that was coming back to visit me with this man. And the doorbell rang, and I didn't know, first of all, how he was going to be. Was he going to be upset? Was he going to be healed? Was he broken? Was he going to be angry? And as the doorbell rang and I was just about to open the door, I said a prayer. Peace, be still. And when I opened the door, what I saw was, wait a minute, let me tell you about the third principle. The prayer of silence offers us the awareness of the presence of God within us. That becomes so palpable that this presence, that everything can come and go. But there's this eternal abiding presence, this changeless force. It's always there. So that same day, I met a patient named Tara. Now, I had never seen her before, But when I looked at her and could see how much her coloring was off, I knew that she wasn't well. And she came to see me for what she said originally was low back pain. But she had fourth stage cancer, and it was through her entire body, and especially her skull, her liver. She said all her joints hurt. And she said, you know what, I'm not afraid to die. I just want quality with the time I have left. Can you help me with this pain? And what was so noticeable was the peace that she had. And I'd seen this before when I worked down in Mexico at the Gerson Clinic. You know, the people there have a very healthy protocol. And what I noticed is that the people who were closest to death were often the most radiant and inspiring to the new people coming in who were unsure. There was this incredible peace that came over them. They exuded that presence. They embodied it. And I saw that with her. And so I didn't know what to do. I said a quick silent prayer, God, please help me with this woman to help alleviate her pain in at least one little bit, however I can. And my hands were guided to her head and her neck and her shoulders to do very subtle work. But to her surprise and mine, it was just a muscle imbalance, and she was completely pain-free. And she thanked me and said, oh, I can have a good evening with my husband tonight. And I thank God for answered prayer working through my hands. And with Jeff, I held the silent prayer, peace be still, and know that I am God at work in your life, in this situation now, as you, in you, no matter what happens. So I opened the door and let Jeff into my office, and he had aged considerably. And I took a deep breath, and I apologized deeply. And he took it in, and he just said, thank you. For you see, the medical mistake I had made is that I had prescribed for him a Chinese tonic, which I didn't know had alcohol in it, and I didn't know he was a former alcoholic. My medical mistake was that I did not take a thorough enough history. So he found out where to get this tonic, and one bottle turned into 10, turned into 20, and he was blacking out and lost his home, his job, and his family. And it took about a year to recover. But here he is now in front of me, 12 years clean and sober. And he said this. He said, sometimes facing our suffering, our shame, our anger, our fear is one of the best prayers we can make. It's just to face it. And he talked about the healing that came from being vulnerable, from being willing to tell the truth, from hitting rock bottom, and the willingness to go to AA and accept God back into his life. And coincidentally, he had a practice. And the practice was that whenever he was about to speak or react, he would stop, he would breathe into himself, ground himself, and he would say, peace, be still, before he'd respond. You know, within each of us is a mighty quietness in which all power resides. Our job is to recognize it and know that that's something that we're a part of. And what he noticed is that he was less attached to those little disappointments and irritations. He said, it didn't have the power over me that it did before. He was choosing to tune into a different power that transformed him, and it exuded from him. You know, there's times that we live on the surface, don't we? You know, there's so much input coming at us. But do you ever notice that even though the waves may not be deep and they can be crashing and making a lot of noise, that the ocean isn't less ocean-like because of those waves? And that the sky isn't less vast and expansive if the clouds are there or not? So there's a silence in us which is not practiced. And it can't be. It can only be recognized. You know that do-nothing prayer I was saying? It's funny because in Care of the Soul by Thomas More, he talks about just abiding in the nothingness, that stillness. And this recognition is that at the core of your being is that changelessness that doesn't have to be earned or deserved or practiced. It's already there. And the invitation, what does Jesus say? I came to give you life and to give you life more abundantly. But the abundance is already here inside us if we get still enough to tap into it. So there's this one in us that's not practicing to be quiet. It simply is. So the warden, back to the warden in the prison, she knew that it took great courage to be present. She had done it herself. And she said, when we stop fighting and face it, what we let be lets us be. And so over those 10 days with the inmates, she noticed that the irritations, that the anger, that the ego, that all of that was beginning to diminish. And at the end of those 10 days when they were breaking silence, these guys, these hardened criminals, were hugging each other. There was joy. And the guards each received, acknowledged, and hugged each one of them. And some of them were weeping in their arms. She said, this looked like an ashram. What does Jesus also say? Be transformed by the renewing of your mind. You know, this practice, again, isn't about the silence or returning or pausing. But it's about that getting in touch with what is changeless in us. That power, that possibility, and that presence. So what if you don't practice the power or the prayer of silence? I think you might be missing an amazing opportunity to experience awareness, freedom, and deep peace. But what if you do? What if you do take time this week to go apart a while, to perhaps turn off the radio or all the media that we're kind of plugged into, and just to be still, or even to just notice and be grounded in our being as we're engaging with another, to allow that presence to move and speak through us. So the prayer of silence offers possibility. I can do all things through Christ, which strengthens me. The prayer of silence offers power. But those who wait upon the Lord shall renew their strength, and they shall mount up with wings as eagles, and they shall run and not be weary, and they shall walk and not be faint. And the prayer of silence offers the awareness of the presence. There is only one presence and one power active in the universe and in my life, God the good. Will you say that with me? There is only one presence and one power active in the universe and in my life, God the good, omnipotent. So what we are going to do now, for not 10 days, but for 5 minutes, we are going to do some Vipassana meditation, and I'll take you through the practice. So I invite you to get comfortable, your spine erect. I invite you to close your eyes and to just notice your breath moving into your nostrils all the way down into your belly and out. And with each breath at first, you might just say, peace, be still. And if thoughts or sensations or emotions arise like that wave, just you might note it as thinking or craving or name whatever the thought is before the story or even as the story arises. Just come back to the breath and notice what is available to you in the silence. I invite you to gently open your eyes. And this week, in this loving presence, be the peace you wish to see in the world.